The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Give us feedback on this podcast or ask tech questions by calling the voicemail hotline at 877-414-5856. That's 877-414-5856 to get your questions answered.
Nate, you're kind of a media guy, god/composer music dude. Is that on your business card?
I love that look you just gave.
I'm not sure God is on there.
No. This is why I call you God.
Dude. No, I don't think
this is why
on
I call
there.
You, this is why I call you God.
Composer. They actually put composer on there, but, so we're like one for four at least or something. So that's good.
This is why you're a rock star, at least to me. I still have
rock star, yes.
a game that Microsoft produced years and years and years and years ago. I was still living in Iowa, called Pandora's Box. And I don't know why they, you know, just kind of threw it onto the shelf. I mean, it should be resurrected in some kind of web format. I mean, it's just an outstanding, fun, challenging game, puzzle game. And the music in this game was, I thought, it was very, very unique. It was although I can't remember the exact sounds. I mean, I can still hear it in my head. It was that kind of made that kind of impression on me. And then I discovered that you were pretty much the guy responsible for that stuff.
That's correct.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Did I get an autograph on my Pandora's box
you
last
totally
time?
He actually came over for dinner one time and then just shoved this disc in front of my face and said, "I want an autograph." And it was my first autograph, so it took me a while to figure out actually what to do. I found a pen, I think, eventually. But well, thank you. That was all done in my living room back in 1998, 1999, kind of around that time frame. Fairly long process, drawn out, had a lot of other projects going on at the same time when I was working on it, so it was kind of my favorite project I had going on, and I spent a lot of extra time on it. I spent a lot of time in the evenings working on the compositions for it, because I had a lot of other stuff going on during the day at the time. And, you know, any questions you got about it? Or
well, yeah, I do have a lot of questions, actually. First, where did you get your training?
I'm primarily self-taught, and I'm going to say that not that I haven't gone to school or anything. I actually have. Took some lessons in piano from various teachers specializing in, you know, classical, jazz, other things, from ages 6 to maybe 17. But I kind of had my own agenda from kind of the day one. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, when my parents threw a toy organ in front of me that had, I was like, maybe I wasn't even 3 yet, and it was one of those organs that has a fan that blows between reeds between the through the keys, and so it's, you know, it sounds kind of almost accordion like and it has a couple of has a set of keys on the left that do some that play chords, and it's got a 2-octave keyboard on the right. And I got obsessed with that thing. I could not let it go. So I don't really know whether, you know, I still don't, you know, as far as like pitch sense and things like that, I think I was able to really acquire that because of my interest in playing around with this instrument during the time when I was still really learning how to speak. Having that available to me to just play around with, and then you know, eventually I got a beat up old piano when I was 4, which I continued to break strings on until I was about 15, and then I got very interested in electronic music at that point as well, and so I started doing kind of synthesizer-based stuff, and by the time I got into college, I was doing a lot of, you know, computer-based sequencing and synth programming and sampling and all those kinds of things. And oddly enough, I found in the game industry in particular a lot of room to kind of use a lot of those techniques. In an area that was just really starting to get exploited by composers, really. It really required at that time to get into the game industry, it just required a lot of patience, mostly, to deal with fairly primitive systems. I mean, the first games that I worked on were 16-bit console games, like Sega Genesis, Super Nintendo, those kinds of platforms. And they were just starting to create user-friendly tools for those, and And then, of course, beyond that, you had just the limits of the hardware at the time, which was an interesting thing to overcome.
Now, what about your influences?
Influences are really all over the map. I really didn't even consider myself much of a mainstream composer until I started doing game soundtracks. It was kind of a sort of a confirmation, really, that I could actually write in a lot of different styles because someone asked me to, and it was like, oh, someone's asking me to write like Carl Stalling or something, and I have a 8-bit, four operator FM chip to make these wildly orchestrated type of pieces with, and there's really very few people that have the patience to do that, and so it was kind of where I started was this very, this idea that, you had to really go out and grab a lot of different types of influences in terms of being able to, shoehorn them into these kinds of primitive platforms. And now the platforms have expanded and our options for producing music have increased so much that a lot of different people are getting involved in it. But yeah, I would say it's really hard to pinpoint a particular type of influence because I kind of grab ideas from a lot of different places. But I suppose the Pandora's Box thing is kind of an example where, basically that's music that represented, places all the way around the world. So
did you really? I mean, when I listened to the music, it sounded like... Do you have the MP3s of those things anywhere, or just the original? I mean, I have
mixes. I have them available, but I haven't actually posted MP3s of them anywhere.
Well, you probably couldn't.
I probably couldn't. Copyright. I don't really own them.
I'd love for my own library. I'd certainly love them. But what I remember distinctly was that it kind of had the flavor of it. Like I think I remember like say Russia, if you were in that country, mm-hmm. Russia, it had that kind of Russian influence, but it wasn't Russian music. It was just like very soft, soothing sounds, almost like Russian muzak, if there could be such a thing in that country. And that's the feel I got from it. And I found it to be very comforting and calming, which is always very good when you're in a game that takes a lot of concentration and gets stress.
The deal with the puzzle game and just the environments and the fact that it's fairly you're kind of going at your own pace on those games. It's not like the first person shooter soundtracks that I've been doing recently, which are completely different. But at the time, it was very much like I was basically creating music that you really could play in the background, while you're doing some things. But the point is that, I was trying to create a series of melodic themes that actually could transfer over to all these radically different types of styles. And so that was the fun of it, was when the producers first came to me, they were like, hey, we want to get a bunch of different music. They're thinking about just licensing a bunch of tracks from different countries and putting them together. I'm like, well, where's the thematic continuity to that? You need something in there that's actually the branding melody in a way that you can actually use. And the fun part was just being able to do that and be able to go, guy, I have to go all the way around the world and see if I can make these melodic themes fit. And all, and if you listen to all the themes, you'll actually hear the same melodies, but they're in these radically different styles. So that was the interesting, probably the most interesting thing about that project.
No, I remember it distinctly, although it's been years and years and years since I may have to actually fire it up and install it and actually start playing it again. Just mm-hmm. And Ponzi, after I talked about it, she wanted to install it and she played it for like 5 minutes and then her attention span is shorter than mine, like infinitely.
Well, I think that would probably depend on.
But Pandora's Box isn't. Honestly, Pandora's Box wasn't built for gamers. It really wasn't. In my opinion, it wasn't. Like it was just there as like a puzzle game. And a puzzle game for me. I'm not a gamer either, but I appreciate a good challenge, like in a puzzle.
And it was, it was developed by the designer of Tetris, which is, definitely reached a much broader audience than the hardcore gaming crowd.
Not like Bejeweled. Bejeweled, apparently, everybody loves. But now, you had mentioned that you're now working on different video games, so I'm assuming you've done so much more than just Pandora's Box. What about recently?
Most recent soundtracks I've worked on are Fear, which is a PC first-person shooter, Condemned, Criminal Origins, which is an Xbox 360 release title, and yeah, currently I've been employed at Monolith for about 5 years, and I've been working on a lot of different soundtracks for them. Starting with Aliens vs. Predator 2 was the first one I did in-house there. Worked on the sequel to No One Lives Forever. No One Lives Forever 2 was a game that I primary composer on, as well as Tron 2.0. It's another one I worked on. And
I'll have to look at I never got Tron 2.0. I heard mixed reviews from the actual gameplay. So
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. I mean, on the art direction side, it's spectacular. as a soundtrack project, I mean, you can't beat it. It's like, wow, a project based on my favorite movie when I was 12.
Yeah.
Just dropped into my lap.
Cool. Did you?
And, you know, and it was great fun. Yeah, so.
Did you get the special edition Tron DVD? And they've got like hours and hours of behind the scenes.
I did take
amazing.
A look at that. Yeah, I did take a look at that. When I was, we were developing Tron 2.0 when that came out. So I had, that was kind of one of my research discs to kind of really take a look at. So I worked on that, and also the massively multiplayer game based on The Matrix Online. I was the music director on that, and I did a lot of, I did actually run the majority of the composition on that. Although we also had the really great fortune of being able to work with Don Davis on some of the material for that. So the loading screens and things like the mission music and stuff like that is comes straight from Don Davis, which is really, really cool. So,
now, are you working as an independent, or are you just specifically with one game company?
I'm actually employed with them, and I actually got to my 5th anniversary just in the middle of last month.
With who?
Monolith. And that's been really fortunate. I've been in a lot of different types of situations. Both as as an independent vendor working with various developers, and also had a variety of positions over at Microsoft, both contractor, vendor, and full time, doing anything from, you know, the type of game soundtrack work we've been talking about to working on sonifying MSN with music in their early stages, to doing sort of being a creative front door person at Microsoft Studios for people who are looking for custom music for, you know, anything from industrial videos to actual software products within Microsoft. So that was I kind of varied a lot of different chapters just at Microsoft as well as independently.
It's a good place to be up here in Seattle, huh?
Seattle is kept me busy.
Work from Nintendo?
I did look into Nintendo at a certain point when I was transitioning out of Microsoft and looking for other jobs in the industry. It seemed like they were doing some interesting stuff at the time, but
dogs. It's all about dogs.
All about dogs.
I have a question. So, how does it work? Do you get to play the game without music, and then you make the music, or do you make the music as the game is being played, or what's the, how's that process work?
Well, you know, it's not as straightforward as movies. And of course, I'm sure anybody in the film industry will probably have their share of horror stories to tell you. But ideally, at least, the way it works in the film industry is that the film gets done, and then there's a post production period, which involves the soundtrack, and so, you know, you have pretty much a finished film, and then, you know, you'll hear an occasional story about, oh, how they had to edit the film after I wrote it, and they cut it in a few places and had to do some things, but nothing like what happens in the game industry. There really isn't a post production period in the game industry, because ultimately with games, they really have to prioritize gameplay. It's kind of one of the things that that ultimately makes or breaks a game. And, you know, I'm really part of the presentation of it. I don't really make decisions on the gameplay. And so, ultimately, they will change their presentation in order to make the gameplay work smoother, which means that even though they think they're done with the presentation and you've already scored it, they're likely going to change it for gameplay purposes. And so, and this happens, you know, right down to the wire. And so, the usually the end of a dev cycle, being a composer for a game is pretty hectic because you're really trying to keep track of a fairly a pretty complicated project that changes on technical levels and changes on presentation levels and everything is all getting moved around and pushed around and it's very critical that the communication paths are open and that you're present and that you're there and you're able to work with that. You just don't get the kind of luxurious post-production period that is just sort of kind of par for the course when a motion picture is done. So it's a very different type of process. As far as when we start and when we get into it, I mean, you can start doing concepts just with notes that somebody scratches down if you need to. And every game's a little bit different. Sometimes they come in when there's a lot of concrete stuff that I can work on. And sometimes I don't, and it really changes. The last couple of games I worked on have been really kind of fun, though. A lot of gameplay was actually a lot of stuff that I had to work with was actually fairly playable, and so I was actually able to use a video capturing software like Fraps and things like that, run it in the background, and just grab game footage and just score it like a film. And the fun thing about that is I was always able to just show the product group, here's the music. And it's not just the music that you're imagining goes with the game. Here it is in context. I'm always just showing the music constantly in context of the game so that it's married to it. People are already kind of seeing it, where it needs to be. And as I'm working on it, it's more like that, too. And so lately, we've sort of, been able to, apply more of these processes and tools into what we're doing to make it more of an integrated process. And that's been fun.
Well, one of the things that happened during, I don't know if you remember, but one of the things that made Pandora's Box so different is that we were coming off of this really highly interactive set of projects at Microsoft where we were setting up music that we didn't know how many times each measure would recur, right? And so there was this sort of highly interactive, non-scorable element to it. Mm-hmm. And then, it was just a wild time because you had just lost your blue card and I had just started on my whole .com thing. And you were given a project that we didn't really take all that seriously, because it was like, oh, this is kind of one of those things that we're doing in between something else. I mean, that was kind of the framework that we gave. I mean, you gave it your all, obviously, but it was a game, it was a puzzle game. So there wasn't that, it wasn't a shooter. You didn't have to, have a lot of if-thens. You didn't have to have a lot of, it was kind of more of an old-fashioned design. And I think that was really freeing for you, as well as the fact that it was just like one window of time where, for that time, we were taking my career really seriously, and I think we gave you a break for a while, and you did this really great work, and we were building the house at that time, and, living with illicit roommates and the whole thing,
juicy. That's
well,
nice
I mean,
stuff,
you know, like, ooh, don't tell anybody. We're not actually
don't
sleeping.
Don't tell the landlord.
We're not actually sleeping in all four bedrooms of this four-bedroom house, And but yeah, it was a really freeing time, not just because the work was incredibly different and less granular. I mean, I think you really were able to do kind of a film soundtrack for Pandora's Box in a way, but also there was that sort of reduced emphasis. Because I remember, going off to work every day and, pretending like I was saving the world and coming back and, handing you the money and, we were doing Pandora's Box too, and it was just kind of fun.
Yeah, that's interesting time.
It was wild. Yeah.
So, were you guys at what point were working together?
Before that,
yeah.
Okay.
During the MSN, the first version of MSN, which is an interesting story in itself. Remember when MSN decided to kind of go up against AOL and said, look out, here, we're going to throw you, some cool flash animations and put online shows and do all these kinds of crazy things. And there's people logging in with their 14.4 modems looking at these things and trying to, waiting for their all their content to download, all 25K of their content to download, which was a huge deal. And they're like, can I just get to my browser,
please?
Well,
yeah, but half the town was employed through ArtSource making these Flash animations. I mean, half the town. Well, you know, I mean, a temp agency for that time. But, I mean, there was so many Flash animators who were employed at whatever, $35
an hour. My manager came from the Interactive Television Group, which was a group that got kind of disbanded at the point that I started working over at MSN, and they, you know, they all went.
That was a sound that we threw at you. Who composed that?
I really don't know who made
Ken,
that particular.
Someone unplugged. Jake unplugged or plugged something in.
Was that Ken?
You think that was Ken?
Yeah, I think it was Ken.
Oh, okay. Good guess.
We know. We know a lot of the sound designers that worked on these various projects, and so sometimes we hear things, and we weren't. You know, I didn't really do any of the the Microsoft UI sounds or Windows UI sounds myself, but sometimes I'll listen to the sounds and just try to guess who did them.
With any luck? I mean, could you verify one way or another?
I don't know how we would verify. Perhaps the internet audience would care to.
Yes. You can call in.
Right, with your verification.
I think the interesting thing is the Windows 95 sound, which was Brian Eno, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I heard rumor that he got paid maybe $600,000 for that or something like that, which seems like a pretty good deal. But of course, it was Brian Eno.
But he made 600 of them.
He probably did. He probably did make 600.
So that's really only $1,000 each.
Yeah, that's true. When you think of it that way.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And then he had to take, you know, it had to go through a committee of various people to approve the sounds, and there were probably way too many people in that.
He's never worked with us again, has he? I mean, us, Microsoft.
Us.
What am I thinking?
I haven't been there for 6 years.
Me either.
Well, now I've lost my train of thought.
We were talking about interactivity and
and MSN and just the whole that whole approach and how it kind of, you know, they totally kind of rebooted everything and kind of yanked a lot of that media out. But at the time, it was like everybody, you know, going forward and, you know, charting out these wild frontiers. And and in our particular corner was dealing with music and actually using some interesting new technologies, the direct music technology, actually a predecessor to it, which the games group really wasn't using at all at the time. And actually that was probably a much better application for it. You know, the games group, you know, was kind of slow to catch on to that. And so a lot of that was really spurned on by, you know, particularly ambitious people over at MSN. So we were really literally, you know, creating non-linear adaptive music scores in MSN, both in the UI and in the interactive shows.
So are you using Windows then to do most of your compositions, or do you ever flip over to the Mac? Because I hear, you know, the Mac is just a great multimedia machine.
Well, because I was invested in doing direct music work, and actually Monolith was one of the main game developers using that technology in their games. And in fact, they did a presentation over at Microsoft, I remember, and I remember you know, my current manager, who was actually, you know, one of the members doing the presentation, and I just remember, you know, them putting on this presentation of this game Shogo, which Guy Whitmore scored, which you know, really cool soundtrack. And I was just, you know, I was just looking around the room going, see, look, people are putting this in games, and that's where it really needs to be. And so that was kind of my you know, ever since then, I kind of, you know, was kind of seeking out opportunities to incorporate that in.
Well, I've just learned that, I mean, this is an unrelated news, but possibly interesting news, since you brought some wine with you guys. What kind of wine did you bring tonight?
I don't know. It was in the $20 price point.
Ooh, fancy.
Yeah.
Usually I get it out of a box. There's a new drinking show, or drinking game with the Chris Perillo show.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. There's a drinking game. It officially, it's like whenever they hear a fight between Ponzi and myself, that's when it's okay to drink.
Oh. Somebody else does this?
Yes, like in the chat room.
Oh.
They're saying, someone need an excuse for a drink. You know, is there a drinking game? And someone said, whenever you hear Chris and Ponzi fight.
Then you just take a drink?
Then they take a drink, yeah. Well, you can take a drink, too.
But. You have to be really clear with thresholds there.
That's
it'd be
scary.
A little fuzzy, you know.
What,
like, was
fighting
that a fight,
Ponzi?
Or was that, you know, I think you're going to have
if
really...
Disagree.
Is it pretty binary?
Disagreement.
No, if it's a disagreement of any kind, of any nature, where I raise my voice and Ponzi is silent for like a couple seconds and then shakes her head type of thing. Well, you really can't tell if she's shaking her head.
Well, only if your threshold's really low. I mean, but what if you mean, like, fight, like, physical, you know, punching?
No. It never escalates to that. I mean, she smacks everyone.
I mean,
God forbid.
But anyway.
I'd be fine with that.
You were asking me about the PC versus Mac thing.
Yeah.
And Macs are still very popular among audio professionals. I can say that I did do a lot of Pandora's Box and previous projects on the Mac. But since then, I've been really completely PC. And that's kind of, where I, you know, kind of the domain I've kind of stuck to. All the games that I develop for are on that platform. I sometimes incorporate technologies that are PC specific. And so it's like, I just, you know, do I have to have another computer? I mean,
Is Vista going to be better in that sense for development, over Windows XP, you know, since you're in the PC realm?
For audio development?
For audio development, sure.
You know, honestly, I haven't really looked at that particular, you know, operating system platform and what kind of advantages that the software developers can take with it. I just know that just based on the way the software has evolved on the PC, and it's good enough now.
Yeah.
You know, it's good enough where I'm not like going, I wish I had a Mac. It's just, it hasn't been like that for a while. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, that's been nice because PCs are frankly cheaper. So, you know,
infinitely.
And that's what we develop for. So it's just, it puts one less computer in my office. So.
Makes sense. Now, Ponzi, what was your question?
Well, I have kind of a boring question, maybe. It's not geeky. It's what kind of music do you guys listen to at home, and do you game at home a lot? And I know you guys have two boys, and are they into music as much as you two are?
Am I into music?
Are you?
So wait.
You
first, the first question. First question is, what music do you generally listen to
at home,
or in the car?
Yeah. We're a little low on bringing in new stuff. It kind of takes an act of Congress to get us out to the music store. Usually I listen to Friends CDs, Friends demo CDs. I listen to anything Nate does. I listen to Nate's band. I listen to, you know, stuff like that. It's just like a lot of times we have non-industry stuff in our car. So
we do that, yeah.
There's that.
But I can say that, you know, we've tried to sort of keep up. So, I mean, not all of our CDs date, you know. We do listen to some stuff that's more current than 1985.
But Deerhoof. Deerhoof is the big...
Deerhoof has been kind of a band we've been listening to a lot
my
lately.
New love.
The kids seem to like it. And
local?
What kind of music?
San Francisco. Kind of... arty alternative kind of stuff, but very low production, you know, in terms of the output, but fairly, you know, relatively sophisticated in terms of the composition. So
it's like fun. A Japanese schoolgirl prog rock.
Yeah, basically, it's
kind of
like
interesting.
That. It's pretty,
really
yeah, it's a lot of fun.
You don't think so?
Prog rock? I've never even heard of prog rock.
Oh, no.
Prog rock.
Okay. Someone get a bag for Chris's head.
Prog rock?
Are you 15?
Yes.
Okay, that explains it.
Do I not look 15? Ignore the 6 o'clock shadow here. Because it's definitely beyond 5 o'clock, that's for sure.
Oh, let's see.
Apologies to Japanese schoolgirls.
Yeah.
Yes, because that's our audience.
Yes,
the Japanese
any that might
girls.
Be listening.
Dear God.
But yeah, well, you know, lots of different stuff. I listen to electronic music. I listen to, you know, some popular music, jazz, classical music. You know, it's kind of all over the map. So our you know, whatever we've got rotating in the CD player is fairly eclectic.
Owen likes Beck a lot.
Owen likes Beck
Owen
a lot.
Likes
he's
Beck.
All about singing the Beck.
I like
Owen's
his latest album.
Yeah, and Owen, really,
he's
Owen really likes to sing sing the first tune on the latest album quite a bit.
He likes to get crazy with the Cheese Whiz. Is that that? I know that's not the song. I was just trying to make an obscure reference.
Yeah, no, he's great. He loves it, and he also tends to like to kind of boogie down when he listens to music too. He tends to kind of, you know, bob his head and start to smile. And then there's been some moments I've heard, like I had you know, they go to daycare part time. I heard a daycare teacher tell me, you know, Owen sat on a box in our playroom when we had a CD going, and he just listened to music for 20 minutes. You know, and I was like, wow, you know. Elliot seems to really kind of remember a lot of the tunes, too. So, like, you know, he's very familiar with the stuff that we've got on rotation in the CD player. So he has a lot of fun with that. But boy, yeah. Influences compositionally, you're thinking? Like,
well, I kind of asked that already, but,
yeah, but or
I was just thinking, are they interested in it as much as you were at that
age? Kids?
The kids
are, it's, you know, they're not generating it at age 3, as far as I can tell, but they still seem to be interested as listeners, so it's I don't know where that's going to go, and, you know, I try not to think about it too much, you know.
Because yeah, I mean, it's not going to be one of those piano lessons at age 4 and, you know,
well, we're not auditions any of that
and,
stuff, you know,
you know, going to adjudications and, I mean, no. No.
But, you know, there'll probably be a point when, you know, you'll want to start asking them what they want to do, you know, and if some of that involves music, cool, you know, we might have something to talk about.
It will not involve Clementi. Let me just tell you.
Clementi exercises.
Yeah, it won't involve Clementi sonatinas.
Yeah.
Just...
I'd hope not.
Yes.
Because, you know,
it's just
that's you can
a
get
downward
herpes.
Slope.
You can get herpes that way.
You can. That explains a lot.
No idea what the hell that was.
There's this
well,
body of work
prog
that
rock
every...
Is either,
that's
so
true.
I mean, it's like we got to really kind of start from
okay,
square
sorry.
One.
Yeah, I think so, too. I don't really know.
Does that answer your question?
I was just wondering what you listen to at home and if you guys game at home.
Gaming is an interesting subject because we really don't have a very good computer at home. And that's just...
Is that on purpose? Like, because you want to leave the computer at work and only
hun,
work?
Yeah, I don't think that's on purpose.
No, it's not on purpose. I try to use the computer and I'm like, I have to hold the jack with the power on jack while typing with one hand. So you can see why I haven't been blogging lately.
It's been interesting lately with the faulty power on the back of our Satellite Pro 4600 state-of-the-art Pentium 3 1 gigahertz machine that I can't run any of my games on. I do gaming. If I do gaming, it's like, you know, on a lunch break at work on one of the machines that actually can run this stuff. We have an Xbox at home, you know, one of the original Xboxes, and storing our media is an interesting challenge. It's an interesting challenge with kids, because you'll come in, you know, you'll leave the room for a second, you'll come back, and you'll see that your you know, 1-year-old son has got a foot on top of two DVDs, like one on one DVD and the other on the other DVD, and he's skating across the floor on these DVDs. And, you know, you're going, there's no way that I can invest in media right now because I've got no safe place to put it. They will find it and they will destroy it.
BitTorrent. There you go. Go digital all the way.
So, you know, other than being an ad for BitTorrent, there really isn't much I can offer in that area other than, you know, eventually when maybe... you know, everybody grows up a little bit in the family and things start to kind of settle down, I can maybe start seeing more gaming at home. I actually do like gaming. And I'm more of a gamer than a lot of people. I'm probably more a gamer than the people I work with even though that I am. I was, you know, kind of a role-playing geek when I was growing up. And so, you know, it was kind of one of the, you know, just being able to,
see.
You know.
My parents wouldn't let me be in the role playing stuff because they said it was from Satan, and then I would start worshiping the devil any minute. Yeah,
your parents really said that.
Yes, they did. Yeah, they did.
They did
not want me to get into. Well,
that's a drinker
right now.
That's a drinker.
They did.
That's a drinker right there. All right,
see, Elizabeth's calling the rules.
I am.
No, it was friends of mine were playing D&D and doing all that wacky stuff, and I'm like, that's kind of cool. And they said, no, it's not. And said, no, because then you'll start worshiping the devil, and then all hell will break loose, literally.
Did you have your own cardboard sword?
No.
See, that seemed to be...
Not really.
Can't, you know...
No, yeah. I never really had a sword. We had, like, paper towel rolls that we used.
See,
but
you know, that was a hobby of mine that I had to kind of give up due to time constraints as I grew older. You know, I don't even really know if I grew out of it so much as just I ran out of time.
Well, you're still a dungeon master. It's just that now you're just dungeon master over your kids, right? You say, you know, you kind of rule their lives that way, right?
It's so hypothetical.
Isn't it more like the kids?
No, actually, it's not hypothetical. It's very bizarre. It's very bizarre. But could you say that you're a dungeon master over your kids?
I think you can go to jail for saying that.
Well, I mean, like in a figurative sense.
The last time I proposed to Elliot, I said, "Well, we're gonna create a dungeon in the basement, and we're gonna put these handcuffs into the wall, just like they have at the bottom of castles." And he got really sad. He just burst into tears and said, "You know, please don't do that, mommy." He didn't think it was funny at all.
So yeah, definitely not the dungeon master route. We've not been taking. That.
Well, I mean, as a title, not necessarily.
Well, that is where his timeout. Used to be where his bed was, but now it's just a timeout.
What, the stairs? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Yeah.
I couldn't
hear. He said just put him under the stairs.
Not under the stairs, on top of
on
the
top
stairs.
On top of the stairs,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we don't have the under the stairs thing.
Yeah.
Oh, we did have an interesting Harry Potter under the stairs sleeping arrangement for a while for Elliot when he was about to. And that was kind of interesting. That was when we were in a basement apartment for a little while.
He does realize he's a muggle, right?
He really has not attempted a lot of spells, despite the fact that he has had some Harry Potter exposure, and that's been reassuring.
Through the books or the movies?
Elliot is five.
Five.
Yeah, Elliot is five. Owen is 21 months.
21 months. Yeah. At that age, are they really, you know, into things beyond Beck and skidding across the floor on your DVDs? Unless, of course, that was the.
He's really into
Bible.
Language, you know, talking.
Yeah, it's
real
all
language.
About the word.
No,
like,
it's fake
babble. Word of the day kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he figures out a word, and then, you know, that's the word of the day. And so he likes to say it, and he gets very happy about it. And yeah, it's pretty cool. There was this one day where he had, like, a... he wanted to demonstrate the no-throwing rule. And he did it by throwing things and then saying no throwing the thing that he, you know, that he was throwing. And he just wanted me to know that he knew the language, which was pretty cool. So, you know, I was kind of still getting out of bed and it was in the morning. And he's like, grabbed a book and threw it. And it said, no throwing book. And then he grabbed a shoe and he threw that. And said, no throwing shoe. And then he grabbed a rubber ducky and he threw that. And he said, no throwing quack quack. And, you know, so, I mean, he really seemed to kind of know his stuff, and so that was kind of an example of what he's all about these days.
So he calls it a quack quack too. See, I told you, you're not the only one, babe.
Another drink.
That wasn't an argument.
Just for
that
the eye roll.
I think the head's about to shake.
Just for the eye
all
roll.
All right, you guys, pour yourself a tall one, tall cold one,
as it were.
Yeah.
Well, I have nothing to relate that to because all we have is dogs. And they really don't practice words or throw things.
Mm-hmm. I have this vision of Owen because of the first time that I met him. He ate spaghetti. And so every time I think of Owen, I have this cute little baby sitting at the edge of the table eating more spaghetti than any of us sitting at the table. He is so adorable.
He
Everyone
does pack
falls
it in.
In love with Owen.
It's those cheeks, at you know, he's got these sight. Cheeks and you just... You have to be kissing those cheeks all the time.
Is he going to get his own blog soon?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Are you facetious?
I can't even get my own. I mean, I'm going to have to just tape record my evening and just figure out how to send that off.
People would love it. Podcast.
Yeah, right.
People. They would. You think I'm kidding? You think I'm kidding? The and my next question was, I mean, I'm along the lines of blogs. Why Egrig 9000? Is it like your
dream
of
a robot?
Oh,
that's a great story.
Well, then I'm glad I brought it up.
Well, tell everybody your blog.
Me
so
and
that
Nate.
They can find you.
Okay, okay. Well I'm
egrig.com.
No, egrig9000.com /mtpub, which do not be like me. Have a meaningful URL. I thought movable type publish. That seems reasonable. No one will. It won't matter. Huh? Oh, I know. So me and Nate met in college, and there was these performances, and this would be like a student, what they call it, a student concert.
Student concerts.
And there's one of our good acquaintances was a drummer, and he titled his piece the Snackmaster 9000.
Snackmaster 9000, yes.
Because that was the title of the vending machine in the building, and total in-joke. And he actually did not show up for his own performance. So it was one of those tape and drum accompaniment things. So the tape had started, like these backtracks that he'd carefully
all
constructed.
These electronic backtracks.
Which weren't bad.
No, they were cool.
And then, you know, there was, had it with the curtain rose on this
there
empty.
There's this industrial stage set up with this yeah. curtain, and there's this drum set in back, and the curtain goes up. And then he's ready to do his solo. And I saw him do it. You know, he did this really, you know.
In the practice.
Furious
right.
solo and rehearsal. You
he's
know,
got the boogada 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 boogada
boogada. Yeah, the whole Neil Peart thing going. Yeah. It was pretty awesome. And then, you know, prog rock, for example.
Yeah. They invented boogada boogada
boogada. Rush did?
Well, no, prog rock. Dude.
Prog rock. Oh, Rush prog is a prog rock okay, band, right, as okay. an example. Okay. Right. So, anyway, boogada 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 boogada. So, okay, but. For the performance, there was no boogada 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 boog. There was just the empty drum kit.
Well, he was backstage, like, saying...
No, I was backstage with him. I know what happened. I was just like... I knew that I could hear the tape was still going, right. And here I am backstage, and there's Brad, and walks back and says, no headphones, man! You know, so he was freaking out about the fact that he didn't have any monitoring.
Yeah. You so know. That was it. So everyone is sitting there, you know. Probably his mom was sitting there or something. And then it comes up, you know, and it was like, wow, this is really dramatic. And there's nobody sitting there. I don't know. I mean, it's just a number, right? And so when I signed up for my Yahoo account in, you know, 1981 or whatever.
Because there are a billion E-Griggs.
They said
out there.
E-Grig was taken, and I'm going to find that person and. And anyway, so I had to pick a number. I didn't like Egrig 612 or whatever automatic
it's so
thing.
Cause,
so I thought I'd pick a number that, you know, that was memorable to the only people who would mail me, which are the people who were in that room that night.
We haven't really made any new friends since then.
No, we haven't. Yeah. We're joking.
Yeah, we are.
So that's where the 9000 comes from. So, yeah. That's me.
So do you have that story posted somewhere on
nope.
egrig9000/mtpub?
No, this is a
you
Chris Perillo show exclusive.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah,
oh,
unless
wow.
I have some amnesia variety, very narrow amnesia, unless I've forgotten.
And how long have you been blogging?
2002, maybe? 3? 2000? It was when I was at that, I was getting my .NET certification, so that was 2003, I think. No, I was working in 2003. It was 2002. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
A long time ago. I basically did it because I saw Robert. I saw him get a job.
It's noble.
It appeared to be because of his blog. So I was like, this looks like a good idea. I think I'll do it. So I opened up a radio weblog. I had no idea what I was doing.
Did that work for you then? Not really.
You know, you get to the point where you just... If you're, it's sort of supposed to be an artifact of blogging. So you got to buy into the whole blogging thing, and whatever good things happen to you are just accessories. You know, you never blog for something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Now, I would disagree, but do you blog, Nate?
I do not.
Is that something that you do, like musically? Huh? Upload like a MIDI file or an MP3 that you know someone would want to listen to that just kind of like you rattled off.
No.
No interest at all.
Interest.
Or you're interested, but you just don't want to do it.
Interest is a relative thing.
Wait, why is Elizabeth laughing?
I'm laughing because I have this vision of him, like, instead of actually vlogging, you know, he would go, well, you never guess what I had for dinner. It was...
You mean I would sing?
Yes.
Wait,
yeah.
Where did that come from?
He said blogging musically.
The singer, just the blog.
Yeah, so yeah, it would be like a whole singer thing. Never mind.
That could be funny.
A musical blogger.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised.
It has to have been done already. It has to have been done already by now.
Oh, I'm sure it is, but people are always uploading this kind of weird stuff that other people just want to see.
But like personal anecdotes set to music.
Yeah, in song form.
That would be
hilarious.
Yeah. For about 5 seconds.
It would be very ambitious, and it would take all of my time.
Yeah. Of which you have none.
Yeah, the blogging, you know, I mean, that would take all of my time. I'm a horrendously slow writer. I'm actually not a terrible writer. If I write slow enough, I can actually write something decent. So it's not something I haven't been able to figure out a way that I can integrate that in on a more casual level where I can just, you know, spit out something daily. If that were the case, then blogging would probably be a better match for me. I don't know. Either I need to kind of adapt the way in which I communicate via writing or, you know, and maybe I'll get better at it. Maybe I just need to do more instant message chatting and things like that in order to kind of get my pace up a little bit more. And,
why don't you just publish your instant message logs?
Because we're not 15?
Yeah, but that would make it more interesting.
There goes Posse.
You're not 15?
Meaning, do you have IM
well,
installed?
Well, you've used this twice.
Installed it yesterday.
Really?
Which one?
What's your handle?
Hey now back off. I'm the one who hey, remember, I'm the 15-year-old here. What's your handle?
I just used my work email address. I didn't do anything fancy.
Oh, okay.
So, and I'm using like an MSN one or something like that. And my department has it because we're kind of at the point now where we just moved our whole company just moved to a new building. And this is the first time when we actually have offices that are, you know, reasonably soundproof. They have decent isolation from each other. You know, we just gave up on our previous work. We would just keep our doors open because it didn't matter whether we had them open or closed. We were still going to hear everything. We're certainly going to hear the bass no matter what happened. That just travels through any kind of paper-thin standard office wall that you might have. So now we have a decent construction. We have these rooms, and we realize, well, guy, you know, now we're not going to be able to just yell at each other. We're actually going to have to, you know, like, figure out a quick way to communicate with each other.
Yeah, but you're not 15. Huh? Huh? Huh?
But what do you mean by that?
Because you said, you know, when I said to publish
I guess
it,
I meant it was making
well,
fun
that,
of me
publishing.
Because... No, it was making different. Fun of me because we're... I mean, if you're moving beyond email, that's great. I'm still, like,
are you
in
shocked?
Email. I do some texting, all to him. He never answers.
Oh,
but
texting.
That's it.
It's a pain to text.
Well, you
and
gotta...
Of course, you know, online gaming is all, you know... as all that kind of chat stuff, too, in order to communicate with the other characters. And so I've kind of gotten in a little swing of that while I've been doing a little playing. And that's been helpful. I'm still a terrible typist, and so, you know, that's one issue.
Which is weird, because apparently you must be pretty adept at the piano or keyboard.
Yeah. I mean, I just never really learned just the keyboard layout blind. I just haven't learned it. I haven't, you know. And it's not like I'm not dexterous. It's just that I never trained myself to, you know, I never took typing class all the way through and trained myself to, you know, not look down at the keyboard while I'm typing, which means
Mavis
I'm slow.
Speaking.
No, you try. She asked.
Like Mavis.
Yeah, I know. That's why you used it for all 5 minutes.
I did.
I never install anything on her computer again because invariably she'll only use it for 5 minutes and that's it. So all the time that I get nagged.
What's
Mavis? That's
Mavis
another drink.
Mavis Beacon is
I'm going by the
assistant.
Eye rolls.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. So that would be two drinks.
Oh, I wasn't.
For each eye.
I missed one of them.
Maybe?
Oh, no. Well, then you have to...
She can do
my previous multiply my previous claims by two.
Okay, so then people are already they're way ahead.
So
you're
all
behind.
You out there listening,
behind,
you know, we're getting close to the borderline now. the sobriety, you know, I think we have 3 or 4 drinks now, has it?
We have 3 or 4 listeners, actually.
3 or 4 listeners.
We're set.
Okay.
One drink for each listener.
We don't really have to worry about accidents.
Okay.
We can't hear you. Okay, that was funny to nobody except for the people that can hear it. Right.
I wish you guys could have heard that because that was really funny.
Okay, so music, kids, blogs,
no, they
jobs.
They have to tell you have no idea how responsible these two are.
What?
They have, you would not believe how their time is scheduled. Every time I think about Elizabeth, I always think, oh, I need to get better at planning my time, because I think you and I decided to go take yoga one day. And just for us to go to yoga, it took like 2 weeks of planning and carving out this hour for yourself.
So I'm trying to understand, you're saying you want to be you want your life like that? Is this what you want?
I'm trying to figure this out. Really cool about that structure.
That's what she
needs. It would never happen, though. I know I could not do that. Even when I have kids, it just will not happen. Or I just don't see it happening. So when you schedule everything from 4:30 in the morning, I believe you told me, until midnight.
On occasion.
I was stunned. So how does that work? How do you get to that point?
Painfully?
It's out of desperation, really. I mean, you get to the point where, you know, you realize I'm just never going to have those Hermione Granger moments again. I'm never going to be on top of it where I've done my homework and I also read the big book of whatever already, and I can already memorize all the things for my next test, and I come to school, and unless some big disaster happens, I'm going to be ahead of the game. Like, that whole world is over. Like, I'm going to be behind on everything I attempt unless I get fairly rigid about making sure that my time fits my priorities. And with that said, you also have to schedule things that are really responsive. So you got to make sure that you schedule things that will keep you healthy or as healthy as possible. And you got to make sure that you schedule things that will, you know, restore you and, you know, have you bounce back from, you know, from things that might happen that, you know, you might need to bounce back from, like, just, you know, stuff happens, right? So one of the things I'm tracking, like I track things on my board. One of the things I'm tracking is I want to be able to have 2 hours of time with no email a day where I'm sitting and doing something. Now, I've made that. Since I started tracking, I've done it twice, right, where I've had two uninterrupted hours, you know. So that's much more of a tracking, like whenever I fit it in. I'd prefer to have it be at the beginning of the day, but that doesn't always happen. The other thing I'm tracking is leaving the building in a way that's really responsive to my energy level. So I'm not going to, like, say, you know, oh, well, I'm going to be here, you know, I'm just going to socialize or, you know, whatever until 5 o'clock. It's an arbitrary number. I'm really going to make my time at my job count. And if I need to go for a walk, I'm going to go for a walk. So there's a lot of flexibility in there, but yeah, you got to sit down and make sure things are planned for the future, like next week, that you'll want to do, right? I mean, you know, otherwise you don't get the babysitter. I mean, really, it's all because of babysitting.
Kids make this happen.
That's a big part of it.
That's, and, you know, they need that for them, too, in a lot of cases, because, you know, you know, you have kids' attention spans are, you know, they're responsive to, you know, whether or not they've got something on their plate that they can really sink their teeth into. And if they don't, if you're winging it and you just don't have that idea off the top of your head, then sometimes it's harder to, you know, get them to focus. And so, you know, that things get a little crazy energy wise. You know, So yeah, sometimes it's just staying one step ahead, which you can do if you're in the right frame of mind. But sometimes it's just nice to occasionally fall back and look at, so what am I doing today? Because I can't come up with the thing that's going to be, you know, fulfilling for everybody. And, oh, look, it's on my list. There it is. This is what I'm going to do. And then you don't have to think about it as much. You know, but
that's why
it's
like keeping a calendar.
Yeah. You know, it's... you know, she does more calendar. Beth does more calendar.
Wait, what was that? Hang on. What was that look?
Because there's a difference in your calendar and my calendar and their calendar.
Well, I know there's a difference between mine and yours.
They actually plan like every half hour, down to the half hour.
I don't have a drink. You know, I have a water. This is all I have. So.
He's still playing the drinking game over here. Go get the wine.
You and I, we have like...
Bring out the hooch.
And I'm losing. I'm losing because I don't have the hooch. So anyway.
And I found out through... Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? It's apparently hooch is named after some kind of Eskimo camp. And it began with the word hooch. For some reason.
Very interesting.
It's one of those random things that I saw when I was doing my thing, scheduling in the other room there. Mm-hmm. That's what I call it. Schedule. Yeah. You don't really plan it down to the exact half hour.
She's exaggerating.
Of course she's exaggerating.
Of course we have bigger, things we have to be there for 8 hours, which we've already talked about.
Like a job, so.
Yeah, like that.
Like a job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So are you going to be in project management or product management or some kind of management
program
for the rest
management.
Of your life? Program management. There's
I don't
so
know.
Many management.
I don't know. I do know that I am not interested in moving vertically, like...
So no trampolines.
Yeah, basically. Like, there's this whole hierarchy of, like, well, first you're a program manager, and then you're a lead program manager, and then you're a group program manager, and then you are, a candidate for, and you go, there's, the ladder, right? And... at least at this point, I'm more interested in moving laterally. So I'm looking for projects that I can be effective in, right? So if I were to move laterally, horizontally into a different project where I might be more effective, that'll be the thing that drives my move.
Why?
Well, mostly because when you move up, you get more removed from the technology, you get more removed, you get closer to the business stuff, which I choose to keep in some sort of cloud, cloud of trust, where I trust it and it happens, right? So you get closer to that, which I would probably need more training and a lot more Kool-Aid for that. And I'm just not there. I mean, I don't know. I could be there 10 years from now, but
right now,
not now.
As a mother,
I don't think it's about that. I think this is just about wanting to... So, I've never had this opportunity, but I think it would be frustrating to have an idea about how to execute on something for a customer and have to go through a lot of people beneath you and across in order to make it happen. Like, it's nice to... Oh, you should talk about your theory of... expanding resolution and working within the play zone. So like there's this idea that you get to your happiest. You've heard about the theory of flow, right? So basically there's a state at which you're happy working.
Washington,
okay.
Right.
So I mean status,
right, I'm with you. Right? I'm pulling your
so,
leg.
So and that has been described as flow. I don't know who coined it, but it has to do with a way to measure it is, taking the material you take in and the effort that you put in has a direct proportion to the results, right? So you take something in, you work on it, and you get results. You take something in, you work on it, and you get results. And that cycle builds up, puts you into this state called flow. And I think that's what a lot of people are after. There's probably a way to get flow as a manager, as a CEO. Most CEOs I've seen seem rather troubled. So, yeah, that's an open question.
Really
about
open?
How to have that flow as an upper manager? I don't know.
So how does that play into you were making reference to Nate's?
Oh yeah, so I guess I can sort of paraphrase your.
Feel free. I don't know.
I don't really know what to call it, but so say you're given a project, like it's a Pepsi commercial, and it's this really great money-making project, but the actual task is like, work on a really good simulated guitar solo or something. It's not very lofty, right? But it pays you really well. Versus another project, which is like, work with, Brian Eno and, figure out how to represent reality in a room with no influence and da-da-da-da, and you have these little speakers that are light sockets, and every time someone plugs something into a light socket, there's some... I mean, just you go on and on for something really interesting that doesn't pay anything, right? So you might think that Project B would be a better thing to be doing with your time, but in actuality, both projects are equivalent because you have to look at how you're executing on the project. So you take the Pepsi commercial, you take that simulated guitar solo, and you kind of draw it out, and you take away the money, and you just look at it in terms of craft, and you find out where that responsive point is, where your work that you're doing, the results that you're getting, maybe you're optimizing the pitch bends or whatever it is proportional to the amount of work you're putting into it. And you can have a great time doing that, right? You can also have a great time messing around with art installations and find your state in that. And it's all in the how. It's not necessarily in the what.
So you're saying take joy in the journey.
Yeah, but there's also, in addition, there's a method to ensuring that you can continue to work joyfully.
Right? It has to do with your perception of scale.
Yeah.
That when a universe might be larger or smaller, depending on, how it's perceived scale-wise. But the reality is that the large universe and the small universe are both infinite. So, you can explore each one with a similar amount of depth.
Now, is this going to turn into a book?
No.
Was just a conversation I had with Beth in the car a while back. We usually have some fairly memorable conversations in the car for some reason.
Oh, Ponzi and I do too, a lot. Only it's not called conversation, it's called argument.
What was the last one?
Last argument?
Yeah.
Oh, God. What was the last argument?
I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. Probably, no, I'm not going to say the D word.
Damn it.
Dishes.
That has nothing to do with dishes.
See, we're very simple people here.
What does it have to do with dishes? I did the
she
dishes
asked
with
the last argument.
But that wasn't the last argument. The last argument was you getting sick on our way here, our way home from Austin. She was sick. Yeah. I mean, she's like sick.
Yeah.
And I knew this, and so I was going out of my way to be like, do you want me to do this? You want me to do this? Want this? Want this? So I go to get, I've got the plane tickets in my hands, and I'm looking on the self-check-ins, the e-ticket things, and on there's a piece of paper on each one that says, if you are on this flight, do not do this and go directly to the ticket agent. I'm like, well, crap, I've got to look up what flight number we're on. Well, meanwhile, while I'm trying to figure all this out, Ponzi's, can you move down? Can you move down? And I said, just wait a second.
My God.
So then,
that's another.
Right. So then by the time I say, wait a second, in this way, just wait a second.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
You yelled at me.
See, no, wait. See,
in front
no, wait.
Of people.
I'm going to give you a test here. Now, mom, tell me which is yelling. Just wait a second.
You're yelling right now.
Wait a second. That's yelling. Now, there's a difference between the calm.
Did you just call me mom?
Wait a second. Yes, you're the closest thing I have to a mom in this room.
Oh my God, you are so stupid sometimes. Why?
You're making her cry.
Well, that would make you very. That would make you. Well, it would be a teenage pregnancy. I mean, if that was the case. Because if I think we're about the same age, though. So that I don't know how that can work.
Oh, I'm like 85.
Oh, well, I'm 84.
I'm one of
so
those people from, Lord of the Rings,
oh, my goodness.
Could live blessed
so,
with long
so,
life.
So she believes that saying, hold on a second, is yelling. She equates that to yelling. So I want to, rent. What? What do you mean? That? No, I'm right.
Wrong.
I'm right. I don't know what you're saying. I'm wrong. You know what? I need to put on a recorder to record these things when they happen so I can click, rewind it, and listen to it again.
Oh, gee, I wonder if there's a technology that can do that.
If I did, I'd run out of tape. I'd have miles and miles of tape, digital tape even.
What happens is you think something and you don't verbalize it. So we walk up.
Because I'm doing 14 things at one time, so now I have to think of 15 things at once.
We are walking up to the kiosk. There are people behind me.
There are not that many people behind you.
I'm asking you to move. Will you go to the far end? Because they're looking at me like, why aren't you using the last kiosk? Right? Because it's like when you get gas, you pull to the last pump. And I look at you and I anyways, I say, why aren't you going to the last kiosk? And you scream at me.
I did not scream.
You
I did not yell. This is screaming.
I was
yelling.
Embarrassed because the other people look at me like, ooh.
Hey, Ponzi, you're making this up. I swear you're making this up. I said, hang on a second. I'm trying to figure out whether or not we are going to move to the end. Turns out we could go to the end because that wasn't our flight. But had I known that and dragged all your big suitcase packed full of shoes and underwear, I mean, which we both wore. I mean, I wore mine. Anyway, so all your big suitcases moving all the way down. Well, by that time, we'd worn all the underwear and worn all the shoes.
So you wore hers?
No, she wore mine, actually, a couple weeks ago.
You're right, guys. This is a much better conversation than the ones that we have.
I know.
You guys make my brain hurt. I'm sure we make yours hurt, too.
So she forgot her underwear a couple weeks ago when we were up at Northern Voice. I blogged this already, and she said it was okay. So I made sure that it was all clear. But I let her wear my underwear.
From like some sort of like social existence theory.
I can't hear you. No one can hear you, Jake.
We went from like some sort of like deep theory on human satisfaction to underwear.
Well, there is some amount of satisfaction in underwear. I mean, gosh, I mean, unless you're freeballing it.
Oh, boy.
Hard for pawns.
So these are the conversations that we have. I mean, wait, let me rephrase that. These are the conversations that I have and that Ponzi gets to be involved with. So I just wanted to put a finer point on that.
Yeah, there's
one
there. A whole, like, Sonny and Cher thing happening.
I just don't want to die by a tree while skiing, so I'm just not going to ski.
Those trees are out to get you, man.
I know they are. I can't even play on the video game. I try to play the skiing video game. I just can't do it.
It's like poltergeists. They're coming in through the window here.
Oh, thanks. You know, Poltergeist is the movie that got HBO kicked out of our house when I was a kid. Because we all got freaked out about it with the meat and everything.
It was because you were going to worship Satan if you
watched
it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, everything always felt... It always fell back to worshiping Satan at some point. Which, yeah, I always wanted to, you know, come up with... You know, next time I go home to see Mom and Dad just walking in with, like, tattoos, you know, like red and, like, horns, like... And just say, hey, I'm a Satanist now. Cool, huh? It would just to get a reaction.
Did you have a conservative family?
No, not really.
I wouldn't say they're conservative. At all. You make them out to be something that they're not.
Oh, just like you make your everything out to the people that you know to be one thing, and they're not that.
No.
So they're not. They're. It's not liberal or conservative,
how many
really. It's
kind of.
Does this happen every time?
Every time what?
Wow.
Every time they're in the same room with microphones.
This is why when I come to your house and you guys are like in sync, I was just like floored. I was just floored.
The kids probably do that to them.
No. They can really you back and forth.
You got, hey, Jake, can you...
Have a normal conversation.
Can you... never mind, I'm seeing
it. What, are you laughing at my hair?
No, you've got alfalfa sprout sticking out.
I look like alfalfa?
Yeah, you do. It's great. Here, give me the camera, Jake. Oh,
No.
It's okay. Really not as funny as...
It's endearing.
It's okay.
I find that endearing, but I don't know. See,
I think that the journey conversation was better. Let's go back to that.
Well, unfortunately, the chat room would beg to differ. They really enjoy drinking.
Really?
Yeah.
What shot are they up to?
Probably 47 with that last 5 minutes.
Well, then you doubled because you started saying we're going to count each eye.
Because her eyes move independent. She can make them do this. She can make them like go this way and then one go the other way.
Oh, boy.
It's kind of like one of those wacky little things that she does. Well, she did it on her first date, and that really...
The independent eye thing, like a lizard?
like a lizard, exactly.
And that was it for you?
Yeah,
that's
it did it for
it
me.
Fall.
She doesn't do it anymore. It's like, you know, you tell someone to do something and they won't do it. Just for the out of the spite, they won't do it.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.